been watching.
Are 99%.
We are.
Are 99%.
Louder.
I'm joined now by Michael Hudson. Michael Hudson is a distinguished research professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he is also president of the Institute for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Now, Michael Hudson is going to be addressing Occupy LA, or is scheduled to be addressing Occupy LA, as part of a teach-in that includes William Black, and Robert Scheer will be moderating the panel that Michael will be on this weekend. And Michael, what I want to talk to you about, because I'm familiar with your work, and I know that you are a big-picture economic thinker, and as you look at this movement, this is definitely a movement that is asking the big questions about the organization of the global economy and the national economy. What would you say if Michael Hudson right now were speaking to the movement at large and the ideas about reorganizing a contemporary, high-tech, industrial, modern economy in a way that would produce more social and economic justice?
Well, there's something very interesting that makes it almost like what used to be called the Great Awakening period in America. I think we have to take a step back and I think talk about tactics to some extent. The basic problem that everybody has right now is people are very deeply in debt. And there's a basic economic principle, debts that can't be paid won't be. The question is, how aren't they going to be paid? People with student loans can't go bankrupt, so the government or collection agencies are going to go after whatever property they have. They're going to dock their salary. And we're basically moving into a period where all of people's revenue, just over and above basic needs, is going to pay the bankers. Now, many people who are in this position are feeling very bad, they're feeling very depressed, and the tendency is to blame themselves. And what I've seen in the Occupy Wall Street movement in New York is very much what's occurred not only in Greece, but also in the Arab Spring. All people are coming together, and at first people may simply walk, onlookers may go by to see what it's all about. But then they think, wait a minute, other people are having the same problem I'm having. It's not really my fault. And they're beginning to say, wait, if all these people have the same problem of not paying the debt, and of being sort of crippled by the banks, then it's not that I've done something wrong in my life. It's that there's really something wrong with the system. Now, this makes them feel gradually there's a lot of peer pressure, and they feel stronger and stronger. And 50 years ago, an old revolutionary strategist told me that revolutions happen when people get tired of being afraid. And in this case, the revolution may happen when people get tired just of being depressed and stop blaming themselves and thinking, if we're all in this together, then it must be that something's wrong with the way the economy is organized. And what's basically wrong is that the financial system is running the government. And for years, the Republicans and the Democrats have said, well, to regulate and to have a strong government is a road to serfdom. And they said, let's take planning out of the hands of government and put it in the hands of the banks. And the problem is, when you do that, then you're on the road to debt peonage. And that's even worse than government planning. And they've then essentially taken the Federal Reserve and the Treasury that are supposed to work on behalf of the population at large, and they've put financial lobbyists in charge, Tim Geithner and the other people, all of whom have ties to Reaganomics from the Clinton administration or to Goldman Sachs and others. So the first thing to realize is something that is a characteristic of all of the big reform movements. They're not necessarily yet going to a radical opposition of saying, look, we have to restructure the whole system. Small marginal reforms won't work. But what they say is, we're trying to restore the way it was, and simply restoring the criminal justice system, which has been stopped, simply restoring the tax system. It used to be that the rich pay taxes. Now they don't. It used to be that if you're a fraud, if you cheated people, if you lied on your income tax, if you lied on statistics, you'd be sent to jail. The Obama administration has appointed Eric Holder as a bank lobbyist who's promised not to throw any Wall Street crook in jail because they're the campaign contributors for the Democratic Party. And I think certainly in New York, what I sensed from the people there was an anger not only at economics, but the fact that the political system is broken, that there's no one to vote for as an alternative because you have what nobody expected, Mr. Obama coming out and moving to the right of the Republicans, coming out with an even more anti-Social Security, anti-Medicaid, anti-black, and anti-minority position than any Republican would dare do, because if a Republican would have done what Obama did, the Democratic Congress would have refused to pass it. But they don't know how to deal with the fact that here you have a Democratic president that is really put in as a lobbyist for the man who he approached when he joined the Senate and said, I want you to be my mentor. You're my hero. And that man was Joe Lieberman, who became Obama's mentor and showed him how to suck up to the financial classes. And we have someone who is simply a nightmare. And I think the people so far, certainly in New York, are saying we're not going to let the Democrats try to jump in front of our parade and simply make this supporting a Democratic Party to screw us even more. They realize that if the financial system is broken and you don't have either party able to do anything about it, then the political system has to be changed as well. Not only the fact that Goldman Sachs gets to win at the auction the right to say who's going to be the Treasury Secretary, someone like Geithner, who just gives them a lot of money, but the whole down the line, the fact that in the Democratic Congress, every committee chairman has to pay to the party $150,000 to buy the committee chairmanship. That's the rule. And that means that the campaign donors get to determine who gets the committee chairmanship throughout all of Congress. And the whole system is geared towards basically screwing the protesters. So once they once the protesters realize that they're all being screwed, that's a pre-revolutionary situation. That's a situation where they can then come and you get a lot of support precisely by not doing what the New York Times and the other papers said, well, you have to do. You have to come up with a solution. They don't have to come up with a solution because right now there isn't a solution on the horizon. There's no way to clean up the mess that's the Democratic Party in Wall Street's pocket, or the Republican Party in Wall Street's pocket. There's no solution within the existing system, and that is the longer that they can simply diagnose the problem and explain what the problem is and share the feelings that everybody has of being victimized, then you're creating a raw material that's going to be able to flower into a political activism probably by spring or this time next year.
Well, let me ask you this, and of course it's somewhat of a intellectual speculative game, but let's say that it's now January 2013, and radical progressive candidate X, Dennis Kucinich or Bernie Sanders, is miraculously elected president. Michael Hudson is the chief economic advisor. What would you do, given the opportunity with a favorable Congress, to transform the American economy in ways that would produce policies that you think would at least start to help to break the grip that the financial industries have in just absolutely devastating the economy in terms of its performance for average households?
There are two stages to any kind of a transformation. The first stage is simply to begin reapplying the laws and the taxes that nobody has been applying. The first thing to do, of course, would be to get rid of the crooks who were in charge, like Geithner, and the lobbyists. You don't want Wall Street to be able to put a lobbyist in charge of making policy. The second thing is, I guess only a president could do it. You invite the Supreme Court members into your office, and you say, please don't take this personally, but because of the lifetime membership, I've got to take you into the next room and shoot you. Unless, of course, you want to simply resign. So you get their resignations. You give them an offer they can't refuse. And then you appoint Supreme Court people that are not radicals and that will reverse the citizens' the ruling that says corporations can give all are the same as people, and in fact I have even more rights than people. You essentially clean up the corruption of the legal system that has led to the crooks not being sent to jail, and essentially decriminalized financial fraud. You then set up a banking system, and there are a number of proposals for this. You set up a public option for banking, so that instead of being reliant on Bank of America or Citibank for credit cards, the government is going to run a bank and a credit card at cost. And the idea, all throughout the 19th century, the idea was that a public option, and at that time it was a post office bank, would provide banking at cost or at a subsidized price, just for the same reason that a government would provide free roads. You want to lower the cost of doing business. So by providing a public option, essentially, you would push the existing banks out of business unless they acted like the old savings banks and SNLs did. In fact, at the most radical, what I would want to do is the Chicago Plan, which was promoted in the 1930s. Essentially, you take away the bank's right to create credit, and you make them do what the textbook says banks are supposed to do. They take deposits, and they lend them out. And because there are not enough deposits in the economy, the government would create money, the Treasury would create the money, supply it to the banks to lend out, but you'd rewrite the banking laws so that they're not able to gamble. You reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act so that they can't gamble. You reestablish productive lending so that banks will lend for actual capital formation, not simply bid up the price of assets from real estate or stocks and bonds. In terms of the tax laws, I would get rid of the tax deductibility of interest. Right now, the tax system promotes debt financing. You want to lower the debt overhead. You don't want to encourage debt leveraging. I would also tax capital gains either at the full rate of income tax or even higher rate. I would close down the offshore banking centers and treat any deposit by an American in an offshore banking center as earned income and tax it at a 90% rate. You'd restore the rates of the Eisenhower administration when the country had the most rapid growth that it had. You would reinstate criminal penalties for financial fraud and attempts to evade the spirit of the law by tax evasion, misrepresentation. If you really wanted to get radical, you would do what is going to be inevitable for every economy, and it's what the Allies did to the German economy in 1947 to create its economic miracle. You have to cancel the bad debts that have taken place. This can be done either by an across-the-board clean slate, or it could be by applying across the country what has been on the New York state law since before the Revolution, when New York was still a colony, and that's the law of fraudulent conveyance. And the law of fraudulent conveyance says that if a creditor makes a loan to a borrower without having any idea how the borrower can pay in the normal course of business without losing their property, then the loan is deemed fraudulent and is null and void. This would free most of the property that's in negative equity throughout the country. And the aim of all of this, of course, when you cancel a debt, you cancel people's savings. But you're in a position now where the richest 1% of America have doubled its share of the returns to wealth in the last 25 years. And that's inequitable. You want to reverse that. And you reverse that by reinstating progressive taxation, basically, and shifting the tax system so that you collect predatory income or unearned income, or what the classical economists called economic rent. You favor wages and business profits, but not simply extractive rent seeking.
And I have one final question for you, and that is, would you support programs like that are put forward similar to what Randy Ray, an associate of yours, suggests in terms of government employment projects to guarantee full employment?
Yes, as long as they're not military. I think Randy and I are in agreement with that. Of course the government should do that. The problem is that Wall Street now says, that's a great idea. Let the government pay for infrastructure and then like spend $1 billion on a bridge and then sell it to us for a dollar and make us even richer. You want to do it in a way that the crooks that are sponsored by the Republicans and the Democrats are not going to be able to turn around and privatize this at a giveaway price and suddenly install a toll booth on the bridge and get a free right to turn America into a toll booth economy. So, yes, I'm all in favor of that as long as you have safeguards against the financial fraud that's being sponsored by the current administration.
Michael Hudson, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on KPFK.
Thanks a lot, Alan.
Welcome back to Building a Powerful Movement in the United States. This is KPFK's Alan Minsky, and I'm joined now by a